Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for February the 11th, 2019. This is David Corey, along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hello, David, and good evening, everyone. Tonight we do have a special guest, John Wells, who is the executive director of a nonprofit organization called Military Veterans Advocacy, which has a national agenda and national impact in helping to improve VA benefits for veterans and their families. Before he joins us in a moment, though, I want to remind everyone that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, comments, and questions. So you can call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Over to you, David.
Thank you, Richard. Our special guest tonight to discuss some extremely important issues affecting veterans is John Wells, Executive Director of Military Veterans Advocacy. John Wells is a lawyer and one of the premier veteran advocates in the nation. He is also a retired Navy commander with extensive career experience as a surface warfare officer. He served in the Navy from 1972 until 1994. Over the course of his career, he was assigned to six different ships and several shore commands. He was qualified in all aspects of surface warfare, including command at sea. Of relevance to his second career, Mr. Wells attended law school at night while still on active duty. He was a member of the Law Review staff and contributed to several law school publications. Upon retirement from the military, he settled in Louisiana and opened a general law practice that emphasized military and veterans law. He has represented military members and veterans throughout the country, and he has extensive experience in both state and federal courts, and he travels often to Washington, D.C. for cases in that city. So let's welcome John Wells to the Veterans News Hour. How are you tonight, John?
Very good, sir. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's our privilege, and thank you for being on our show again. We have lots to talk about tonight, but first, can you give us an overview of your organization and its goals? For the benefit of our listeners who may have missed our prior shows when you were our guest.
Sure. Military Veterans Advocacy is a 501c3 organization. We're tax-exempt, and any contributions are tax-free. Our job is to, what we call, litigate, legislate, and educate. We litigate. We file suits on behalf of military personnel and veterans suing service secretaries and my personal favorite, Secretary of Veterans Affairs. And slip of the tongue there. We also legislate, spending a lot of time in Congress working on different veterans legislation. And we educate by making veterans aware of their benefits by doing outreach. We have a social media campaign. And, of course, we also do continuing legal education and train lawyers in veterans law.
Well, that's great. And, John, I'll ask you again before the show's over, but tell our listeners your organization's website, if you will.
Sure, it's www.militaryveteransadvocacy.org, one word, militaryveteransadvocacy.org.
Great. Now, what can you tell us about the recent federal court decision on the issue of Blue Water Navy Agent Orange benefits for Vietnam War veterans?
Well, actually, it's quite big. We've been trying to get Congress to restore the benefits to the ships who were in the bays and the harbors and the territorial seas of Vietnam for several years now. And we almost had it through last year, got it through the House unanimously, and then a couple senators put a hold on it at the last of the session. We were unable to get it passed. Although it was reintroduced this year, we kind of did an end run on them by filing a case in the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit called Procopio versus Wilkie. And the court ruled on that on January the 29th, basically agreeing with us that service in the Republic of Vietnam, you know, included service in the bays, the harbors, and the territorial seas. So basically, we've got just about everything we asked for from the court. We've been trying to get Congress to do for 8 years.
Wow. Now, John, for those of them that may not be familiar, when you talk about territorial seas, what does that mean?
Territorial sea is that belt of water off the mainland of a nation under which the nation enjoys total sovereignty. In this case, in the case of Vietnam, they use what they call a straight baseline, which is a direct line from the low water mark of all the islands off the coast of Vietnam. That's the start of the territorial sea. Everything landward of that is called internal waters. Starting at that baseline and going out 12 nautical miles is your territorial sea, and the court has agreed with us that that's sovereign territory. So when they say service in the Republic of Vietnam, and you know the Congress actually used the formal name of the country, that meant the territorial sea was included in the definition. We fought the VA on that for years, and as of now, you know, we're waiting for the final mandate to issue. Hopefully that's going to happen in about a week or so. VA is trying to decide whether or not they're going to seek certiorari from the Supreme Court.
I see. And how long do they have to meaning the VA, do they have to decide whether they're going to try to pursue an appeal to the Supreme Court?
They have 90 days, and it's not an appeal as of right. It's right. Basically a request for the court to hear it. So they have 90 days. They can't ask for an extension, and I wouldn't be surprised if they did. But, you know, the issue is I don't think the court's going to hear it because, frankly, yeah, and even if they do, I think, frankly, we're going to be better off because the Supreme Court should rule in our favor. It takes the approval of the Solicitor General and four justices to agree to hear the case. And the case that decision that came down off the Federal Circuit was pretty clear-cut. You know, it was very well-written, and it was a 9-2 decision. Even the dissent basically said, well, we don't think Congress did its job. This should be something Congress should do, but they never said that Mr. Procopio shouldn't get his benefits. I would be very surprised if the Supreme Court even took this case.
I see. Yeah, and as far as I know, just the percentage of cases that the Supreme Court takes on a writ of certiorari is a pretty small percentage just to begin with overall. So
that's about 1%, I think.
Yeah, so that works in veterans' favor. What can you tell us as far as the practical impact of the Procopio versus Wilkie decision for Blue Water Navy veterans? What does that really mean for them?
Anybody that's got a case that's open, be it at the regional office, the Board of Veterans Appeals, the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, or anywhere, even an intent to file, that's going to be mean that Procopio is going to control. Where we're going to run into problem is if they had filed the claim, been denied, neither did an appeal, or that appeal is final. Those cases are going to have to be reopened, and you can't use a court decision as new and material evidence to reopen a case. But what you can do is just find something, a deck log, a cruise book, a buddy statement, anything, to go back in there and say, hey, we've got some new evidence here. We need to reopen the case. And, oops, by the way, we've got the Procopio case. The other alternative is, of course, to go file a brand-new claim or at least an intent to file, because that will protect you as of the filing date.
I see. Now, as far as the scientific evidence behind it, behind the idea that Blue Water Navy veterans were exposed to Agent Orange. What if they do their research and find out that their Navy ship was outside the 12 nautical mile territorial sea demarcation? What should they do?
Well, there's a couple of things we can do, but at that point they're going to need probably some specialized help. They need to go to an attorney for that. I wouldn't fool the VSO. The VSOs really are only good for filling out the forms. There are some other theories. First of all, you can look at direct exposure. If the plane took a helicopter, brought in personnel, small boats, if the ship took any of those on board, they came from Vietnam, then there's a good chance that they were contaminated with Agent Orange and brought that on the ship. And just like you bring a virus on the ship, that stuff will permeate throughout the entire entire ship, really. And, you know, people are going to track it down on their shoes. You're going to wash down planes. It's going to go all over the place. Mailbags with staged at Da Nang Airport. And they would have been permeated with the Agent Orange. So there's probably a dozen different ways it could have gotten on the ship. And we use those as for direct exposure theories. The other thing is, frankly, we're looking at possibly extending past the territorial sea. Now, that's going to be a future case. And I'm looking for somebody who was just outside the territorial sea. The Judge Lori's concurrence actually left an opening that I don't want to go into too much on the phone, because I think the VA might be listening. So, you know, I don't really want to lay out the complete strategy. But if you got somebody that's right outside, and they've got an appeal going, we're looking for you.
Okay, all right. And, again, tell our listeners, I have some other questions for you, and I'm going to turn it over to Richard Hurley. But, again, how could they contact you for your assistance?
They can contact us through the website, or they can just give me a shout at 985-641-1855. And... you can also take send me an email at johnlawesq@msn.com. But the easiest is just to go through the website and do it that way.
Okay, very good.
And we also,
Another question.
Also take tax-free donations on that website, just so you know.
Very good, good. And that's important, because I know you're doing a lot of great work, and it takes a lot of time and resources. But before I turn it over to Richard Hurley, I knew he had some questions. Let me ask you... to maybe circle back to something you mentioned a few moments ago, John, which is legislation before Congress on the Blue Water Navy Agent Orange issue. You said that it had passed, and I think you said it passed in the House and then it got hung up in the Senate in the last Congress. What's the current status, if you can tell us?
Well, the bill's been reintroduced in the House, and they're working on it in the Senate. The problem we've got is they have to really incorporate the effect of Procopio. And so, you know, we're working on rewriting the bill so that it will do that. The thing about H.R. 299 of the Blue Water Navy bill is it has a look-back provision. So the people that actually had claims that were denied and not appealed will have a remedy, because the secretary is required to go back and notify people and reopen the claims. So we still need that bill to... make sure that everybody is covered within the territorial sea. We're also going to look at trying to introduce some bills in some other areas, including the Central Pacific Islands of Guam, Samoa, North Mariana Islands, and Johnston Island, which were also contaminated very heavily with Agent Orange. Now, I have filed what they call rulemaking requests with the Secretary, both on the Central Pacific Islands and again on Vietnam. And that's one of the other areas that I can talk about as far as trying to extend matters. We're actually trying to move it out about 150 nautical miles off the Mekong River, because the heavy discharge there will go out, you know, hundreds of miles in just a few weeks. We're also looking at other things such as plane flights coming in from Da Nang and so on and so forth, contaminating the flight deck of carriers, and then getting Trump all over the ship. So that's when I met with the Secretary last December, and we gave him a rulemaking request on both Central Pacific Islands and Vietnam, and we'll see what happens. They have to respond to that. If they don't, we'll file what they call a mandamus on them, and a mandamus is just a court order saying, hey, Mr. Secretary, do your job.
I see. That's very interesting. Let me turn it over to Richard Hurley. I know he has some questions for you, John.
Yeah, I just have a couple questions for you, John. How you doing?
Doing good. Now, don't make them hard questions now.
just the one regarding the herbicide exposure at Guam. I know you've been working on it. What can you tell us about it?
Well, we had one of our folks, a guy by the name of Brian Moyer, was a Marine on Guam. He lives down in Florida now. And he's been working with us, and actually he's on our board now, and we've made him the Deputy Chief of Staff for Central Pacific Islands. He was instrumental in working with former Congressman DeSantis, now Governor DeSantis, getting a GAO inquiry into the situation in Guam. And they reported out this past November and said, well, gee, they can't really say Agent Orange was there because all the shipping documents have been destroyed. You know, it's a normal course of business. They got rid of those things. But they did say there was a lot of evidence, anecdotal evidence of the use of herbicide, which is a distinction without a difference. Herbicide and Agent Orange are the same thing. We then had done some soil testing, and GAO went in and did look at some soil testing reports and found the presence of the 2,4-5-T component, which is contains the dioxin, which is the lethal element in Agent Orange. So we can't really say that Agent Orange was there by name, but whether you call it Agent X, Agent Orange, Agent Purple, or Roundup, you know, it still does the same thing. And you may have seen there was a guy who won a $13 million judgment against Monsanto for Roundup, and he developed non-Hodgkin's lymphoma as a result of that. So, you know, a lot of folks think that Roundup is Agent Orange light. But we have confirmed the presence of it there, and we confirmed through the use of Guam Land Use Plan that herbicide was actually sprayed up until about 1980. So the new bill will actually run from the period of 1962 to 1980, which should cover most of the folks. Now, Johnson Island is a little bit different. That's where Agent Orange was sent to die. It's a little four-island atoll in the middle of the Pacific. It was downwind of the atmospheric test, so you know it kind of glows in the dark anyhow. But they took the Agent Orange there in 1972 from Gulfport, Eglin, Air Force Base, Vietnam, everything else, in these 55-gallon steel drums, many of which were corroded, and just dumped them there on the island. About 1977, they took them out on an incinerator ship, burned it, pancaked the 55-gallon drums, threw them over the side.
Wow.
You know, great environmental disposal there. Yeah, if you're a fisherman, don't go fishing near Johnson Island. I don't know what you're going to get. And that island, by the way, now is uninhabited. They used it as a wildlife refuge. And, you know, park policemen will go out there every once in a while. But that's about it. There's about 2,000 veterans on there. We figure about 50,000 on Guam. But, you know, the problem is we're tying these bills to usage, not to the fact that it just stays there and stays there in the soil. I mean, we know around Da Nang, we just spent $84 million incinerating, you know, a lot of dirt and so on and so forth to try to get rid of the dioxin there. We're spending over $100 million up near Bien Hoa. That stuff stays in the soil, and it's continues to be a killer. Now, one of the things that we're proposing is what we call a toxic exposure research center, because, you know, we'd have never had a blue water situation if the Australians hadn't tracked the health of every veteran from the time they left service. They're the ones that saw there was a higher cancer incidence among Navy vets compared to Army. Well, we need to do the same thing. You know, we're looking at a toxic exposure research center. They'll provide grants to, you know, local medical schools, environmental folks, whatever, okay, to track these health trends. And we're trying to set the thing up so that it's VA-funded, but not VA-run. I mean, I don't trust the VA to run anything like this. You know, would allow, you know, private entities to go out and start looking for the health trends and then finding the clusters and, you know, going from there. So, and just an example, our new chief of staff is a retired Air Force colonel. He's a wing commander stationed on Guam 2003. He comes back in about a year plus, has a child who's autistic. Well, he finds out that, you know, four or five other officers in the squadron, same thing. After they came back post-deployment, they had an autistic child. Now, do we know that there's a connection between that dioxin that's still in the soil and autism? No, we don't. And there may not be. But what we need is an organization to look at these health trends, track them, and then let's go and find out. And if we don't have anything like a toxic exposure research center, we'll never find out.
I see.
John, I got a question on that. certainly that sounds like an awesome idea. Don't you think also that by the time we do
I'm sorry, I lost you there.
Rick, can you go ahead and repeat that? I don't think we have a really clear connection, Rick.
Yeah, okay, David. It's great that, you're proposing, this toxic exposure research center, and by all means we need one, but don't you think by the time we get all this up and running, it could possibly be moot because so many of these veterans are going to be dead? I mean, I had a colonel Colonel Flamani, who was flew in the B-52s over Vietnam, and he was stationed at Johnson. Matter of fact, he was in charge of Johnson. He died during the course of his claim that I was representing him on. And fortunately, we went to the Board of Veteran Appeals, and we did win the case. The BVA came back and would not commit to conceding that his cancer that he died from was caused by his exposure to either the C-130 that he was on or Vietnam or Johnson, but then did the caveat, the big overview, by saying, well, we know he died of cancer and he was exposed somewhere of herbicide, so we're going to grant it. And he was granted, and the widow, fortunately, has received some benefits. But the BVA didn't commit. They knew they had to do the right thing, which is, thank God they did the right thing. But they really didn't do the right thing, because they clearly could have said that his cancer was caused by his exposure to Agent Orange on Johnson. But they just backed off. They wouldn't do it.
Sure, and you're exactly right. And of course, the BVA decisions are not precedential. And there's a lot of things we could talk about on the BVA, and not very many of them very good, but there's a lot of things that need to be done with that organization, and I'm afraid this Appeals Modernization Act is not going to do it. But back
to
your
my next question. Speaking of not something that's not very good, and I'm in the trenches every day, and I was working on 15 cases today, trying to get them settled prior to the RAMP program going into full force and effect on the 19th. And I just see it as a disaster. I'm very familiar with a number of decision review officers, not just in St. Pete in Florida, but I've had cases in Montgomery and Houston. And even these decision review officers are saying it's a disaster.
It is.
What can you comment on that? I mean, if everyone's saying it's a disaster, why are we doing it?
Because the VA sold Congress a bill of goods, and our big six VSOs, with the exception of the Veterans, the Veteran Veterans of America, went along with it because, frankly, they didn't know any better, and they just kind of kissed the VA's you-know-what. But before I get to that, and believe me, I got a lot to say on it, you're right about the Toxic Exposure Center being moot as to people of certainly of the Vietnam generation. By the time it's up and running, it's primarily going to be too late. But I have great confidence in mankind's ability to have more wars, and I have great confidence in the United States military to, as well as killing the bad guys, also come up with ways to kill our own people. And, we might be looking at ozone depletion from a death ray in the near future. I don't know, but we need this thing going forward to try to get ahead of it. Now, as to the Appeals Modernization Act, you may remember, if you've ever read Dante's Inferno, the sign over the gates entering hell, all hope abandon ye who enter here. And that's about how I think about the Appeals Modernization Act. It was written by the VA, for the VA, to basically make it easier for them to deny claims. They pull a bait and switch on the veteran. First thing they're going to do is say, well, if you go in and appeal just on the record, you'll get a decision faster, and you will. There's no question. It just won't be the decision you want. And, you should stop and think for a second and say, wait a minute, if they didn't grant it on the record as it is, maybe I shouldn't appeal on the record as it is. But the VA and many of the VSOs will try to push it to just say, just sign this and send it up. And that's just easy way to get your claim shot down. There is a provision where you can do a second docket where you can add evidence. And, you know, that's a little better. But, again, you have to go and you really have to have somebody who knows what they're doing, an attorney, to prepare the case. I mean, that's what we get paid to do, is to prepare cases, gather evidence, make arguments, write briefs. And, we've got the training to do that. And if you go just with standard VSO, I'm not saying there aren't some good VSO service officers out there. There are. But, you know, the vast majority of them, from what I've seen, really give it a lick and a promise and just kind of hope for the best. The third lane will allow you to get a hearing, which is the way that the system is now, and that's what I recommend people put into. Yes, it's going to slow the process down for you to get a hearing, but you can get a video teleconferencing hearing, and that's where you can look eye to eye with a board member and actually make them look you in the eye before they make a decision on the claim. And I found that appearing at a hearing is the most effective way to do it. And I've had some pretty good success at hearings. Now, don't say I won them all. I certainly haven't. But, I'd say to me it's the best way to go. But the problem is you lose your duty to assist. So if you file a notice of disagreement on an appeal, what you're doing is basically waiving your duty to assist. That means you've got to go through the Freedom of Information Act or go gather all your records and so on and so forth yourself, and usually that means you have to pay for them yourself, and it can become a pretty big hassle. So what you almost have to do is file now what they call a supplemental claim. A supplemental claim says, hey, I still got a duty to assist, and here's the records I need you to get, and so on and so forth. And it's not good, but, it's at least you get a chance to get a second shot at it through the duty to assist, because, frankly, the VSOs don't properly utilize the duty to assist, in my opinion. I will also tell you that the duty to assist is really, it's not that good. It's not like the discovery that we attorneys are used to using. For example, try to get a curriculum vitae on somebody that's done a CMP exam. They won't give it to you. Now, luckily, most people have their CVs online now, or at least enough online that you can figure out. And I've got people that are not certified in the areas they've been doing the CMP exams on. Shoot, I've had them done by nurses, physician assistants, and everything else. And yet the board will look at it and say, oh, well, we have to assume that the VA doctor is competent. Rather than, this board-certified guy that you've brought forward who's been qualified as an expert, and it's really a problem. We've got a case up before the Court of Appeals of Veterans Claims right now on just that issue. And I'm hoping the court's going to come out and, one, force the VA to give us that the CVs, and, two, force them to use doctors that are board-certified in the area that they're examining. But, the key to this, we do everything stubby pencil in the VA system. You take your computer, you print out your evidence, you send it to the board with a copy to Janesville. Maybe it gets scanned in the right record. Maybe not. Okay. That adds weeks to it. Sometimes it gets lost. It never gets scanned in order. And you're sitting there saying, this is a mess. Then you get into VBMS, and I don't know if you guys are in VBMS or not. They told me it's a two-year process, and I've got to be investigated and fingerprinted and everything else. And so, what the heck? I mean, I got investigated when I was admitted to the bar. Plus, I carried a top secret clearance on active duty. Why do I have to go through this process? And then when you do get into VBMS, it's not that good anyhow. It's the best computer system of the 1980s. and really, it's just terrible. Okay. Every federal adjudication system, Merit Systems Protection Board, Social Security, even the military law, has some form of electronic filing. So I can just grab my PDF file and upload it directly. And, you know, I met with Cheryl Mason about a year and a half ago and said, you know, you need to do this. I mean, the e-appeal system that the Merit Systems Protection Board uses off the wall, off-the-shelf software, it would take nothing to start doing that. Oh, yeah, well, that's something we're going to look at. Doing a scheduling order. I mean, how many times do you get a hearing date saying, hi, here's your hearing date? And then it's like, well, okay, I've got a conflict on that date. DRO hearings are the same way. You write your letter, it goes into the black hole. Maybe you get a response, maybe you don't. Usually you don't get a response. And, you know, you go through this two or three times. I always put in all my correspondence, please coordinate dates in advance with this office. That never happens. And as a result, you know, you just get on this hamster wheel going round and round and round. And this Appeals Modernization Act is just going to make it worse. I don't know if comes across or not, but I'm not enthralled with this act.
Right. John, if I could, Rick, if you have any questions, go ahead. I have a follow-up on John's discussion of the talk. Go ahead.
Back to you, David.
Okay. John, just to follow up on the Toxic Exposure Research Center idea that you had mentioned, I know from reading the background you provided it, that funding of that is going to be an issue. What can you tell us about how you propose that that would be funded?
Well, we looked at a lot of different ways, but believe it or not, between 2003 and 2016, federal government made $1.2 trillion with a T in improper payments. Now, this is federal government-wide. 2017 was $141 billion. $10.8 billion of that was the VA, and they've recovered about 17-18% of it, something like that. Well, our draft calls for a aggressive and accelerated collections process, and a lot of this is contractor overpayments, payments for non-performance, that sort of thing. And certainly we put a hardship waiver provision in for veterans that had hardship, or like the California National Guards, my favorite example, where they told these guys if they sign on the dotted line, they get a signature bonus, and they gave them the bonus, sent them to Iraq, brought them back, said, oops, gosh, guys, sorry, we were just kidding. And we were actually worked with Congressman Palazzo and Walz to get that overturned. But, you know, those are the kind of hardships. But there's a lot of money that's just going out the door, people that have dropped out of school and are still getting benefits, or the school's getting benefits in many cases. Money's going straight to the schools. And, you know, that needs to be recouped. There's another thing that we've been kind of kicking around in, and this is not in the material we sent you, so kind of a little surprise here. In 2010, the Congress passed what they call the Pay-As-You-Go Act, and or PAYGO. And what it says is anytime you have an increase in benefits, you have to decrease it somewhere else. House rules say that has to be within the same agency. And it's been incorporated into the House rules ever since then. Speaker Pelosi did again for this Congress. However, she ran some opposition actually from her own Congress. And there's a bill, that's actually would repeal PAYGO. Well, you know, I'm of the mind that there's areas where we probably do need PAYGO, but veterans' benefits is not one. I mean, we've already bought and paid for our benefits with our service. So we've talked, and I spent 2 weeks up in D.C., and we've talked to a number of folks on both sides about the idea of doing a veterans' exemption to PAYGO. And, you know, I don't know if we've got enough to get it passed yet, but we certainly started that conversation. And we may look towards doing that. At that point, funding will become less of a problem. Because in the end, that's what stopped the Blue Water Bill. The VA went in and dumped a whole bunch of bogus numbers on the Congressional Budget Office at the last month of the session. That caused Chairman Mike Enzi, Senator Mike Enzi from Wyoming, to put a hold on the bill because he's chairman of the Budget Committee. Because what happened was, CBO increased the score of the bill way past our offset. And Senator Enzi caught a lot of flack over that. We met with him last week, actually. And sorry he caught the flack. I mean, I understood what he was doing. The man's just doing his job. But
you know, we worked with them, and we had met with the CBO. We gave them our numbers. They looked at our numbers. They looked at the VA numbers. And then after we had first raised the issue, they had started running some independent analysis on their own, independent of the VA, and their numbers came up very close to our numbers. So, you know, we solved that problem. Unfortunately, we were not able to solve it in time for the bill to get passed. But we're going to keep running into this problem. We're going to run into it with Guam, Thailand. There's a bill coming in on Thailand. Burn pits, there's a number of issues dealing with burn pits. And, you know, God, I don't want people who are suffering from burn pits to have to come to Congress when they're my age, and I'm too doggone old, you know, to beg for their benefits. You know, we shouldn't be worrying about PAYGO when it comes to veterans' benefits. That's a cost to go into war. This was the disabilities that we're looking for were suffered, you know, while in service, due to service, and in many cases caused by Uncle Sam himself. You know, it's another reason why we want this toxic exposure, because research center, because if we can start doing the health trends, identify the clusters, we can get away from having to do presumptives. We can go ahead and just target the folks that need to be targeted in a good way. I don't mean that in a bad way, obviously. But, you know, and in the end, we may wind up saving a lot of money.
I see.
Makes some sense?
It's a complicated issue, and I applaud your efforts in trying to maneuver the problems in Washington. With the change of power from the Republicans to the Democrats, do you see any kind of change in tone as far as veteran issues up there in Washington?
Well, I was kind of hopeful. You know, I liked the guy who was chairman last Congress, Phil Rowe. And I like Mark Takano, who's chairman this time. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, the problem is what we have to prevent is for any of these veterans' bills to become political football. So, you know, we're nonpartisan or bipartisan. I mean, I've got my own thoughts. But the approach that we take is we don't take one side or another. We're not going to get involved in any political things like this Mar-a-Lago 3 thing. We're going to be looking towards pushing just for veterans' benefits and to take care of the vets. In the past, the Veterans Committee has been the most bipartisan of all, so we're hoping that's going to continue under the new Democrat leadership.
I see. I see. Well, John, thank you so much for sharing your insights with us. One more time, how can listeners learn more about the organization, Military Veterans Advocacy? And what can they do to support your work?
We're on Facebook, of course, at Military Veterans Advocacy. And, you know, I urge people to go there. You can go to our, we're on Twitter also, at MV, capital MV, Advocacy, A-D-V-O-C-A-C-Y. And you can also go to our website, www.militaryveteransadvocacy.org. And see some of the things that we're doing. And we're in a constant. We're actually revising that website, so we need to play a little bit catch-up. But, you know, you're certainly welcome to go there, take a look at it, and, you know, certainly can make a tax-free donation there as well. We appreciate all the help that we've got and all the support we've got. For those of you that are federal government employees, our CFC, Combined Federal Campaign Number, is 59905. But, you know, help us to help you. We are going to continue to litigate, and we have other court cases going on right now. We're, and in fact, one we're going to file pretty soon is going to be on that Appeals Modernization Act. Litigate, legislate, and educate. And, you know, we're kind of proud of some of the things we've been able to do. We've only been in existence since December of 2012, so we're making our presence known.
Well, thank you, John, and we applaud all that you're doing, all your organization is doing for veterans and their families. We'd like to thank you for being on our show once again. Like to invite you back in the future so you can keep our listeners updated on your organization's projects. We hope you have a great rest of the week, and good luck in your efforts.
Thanks so much, my friend. God bless, and I appreciate you having me on.
Thanks, John. Talk to you again. Well, that was an awesome interview. I'd like to thank John Wells, the Executive Director of Military Veterans Advocacy, for being on our show once again. And hopefully he'll be back to keep us updated on all the many judicial, legislative, executive issues that affect veterans. Richard, before we turn to our other news from Washington, any thoughts?
Well, I just think we just got to watch and see what happens, David. I'm pretty pessimistic when it comes to the VA, so, and I think that's what John said as well. It's a sad state of affairs that we have up there in D.C. and the VA and how our veterans are being treated. And this RAMP program is just another example of throwing them down the road, kicking the can, not taking care of them. That's all I got.
Yeah, well, as John had mentioned, you know, this Appeals Modernization Act, which was enacted in 2017, August of 2017, it was essentially written by the VA for the benefit of the VA to make the VA's job easier, and it was actually supported by many of the major veteran groups, who I think have often been criticized for being kind of in bed with the VA, but two of the major organizations which opposed, very critical of the problems with that legislation, was John Wells' group, Military Veterans Advocacy, as well as Vietnam Veterans of America. And you and I discussed all those issues in many shows back in 2017. And it seems like the concerns raised then by John Wells and the Vietnam Veterans of America and our show seem to be coming to pass. So we just got to keep the spotlight on the VA, and hopefully we can have an impact in improving things for veterans and their families.
You know, another big problem that we're seeing is veterans who are listening, if you have the opportunity and you can find someone at the VA, find out where your case is currently venued. You may have started out in Florida or Alabama or Georgia, and lo and behold, you're now out in Boise, Honolulu, Newark, New Jersey, and your case is being heard there. You know, what happens if you get that day where you can have a hearing? Are you going to have to fly out to Boise, to Newark, New Jersey, from Alabama? It's another problem. I spoke to a couple of DROs down in Montgomery, and their response to me was, "You can't do that to the veteran. You're going to eventually have to have the case come back to Alabama, come back to St. Pete." So it's just a cluster of craziness going on. But whatever their intentions were to try to make the situation better, all they've done is complicate it more and make it more of an impossible journey for our veterans. So, you have any more news for us, David?
I do. Just a couple quick items before we wrap up the show tonight. These are courtesy of VA press releases recently. In other news of interest to veterans, registration opened recently for the 2019 National Veterans Wheelchair Games, and the registration will continue through April the 15th. The event this year will be held July the 11th through the 16th. That's July 11th through the 16th in Louisville, Kentucky. The VA announced that the 2019 National Veterans Wheelchair Games, you can register online. The website is wheelchairgames.org. So you can register. Its registration started in January 7th, and it runs through April 15th. Website, wheelchairgames.org. The event is the world's largest sporting event for veterans who use wheelchairs, and it'll be, as I said, July 11th to 16th at the VA Medical Center in Louisville, Kentucky. In the press release, VA Secretary Robert Wilkie said, and I quote, "I encourage every veteran interested in competing at the National Veterans Wheelchair Games to register for this important event. The games exemplify VA's commitment to to supporting veterans as they navigate through recovery and rehabilitation to active, independent lives. Sports and recreation play an important role in this journey, enhancing veterans' positive mental health and physical well-being, unquote. Now, the National Veterans Wheelchair Games offer 19 different competitive events, including but not limited to air guns, archery, basketball, bowling, field events, power soccer, quad rugby, softball, swimming, the list goes on. Athletes compete against others with similar athletic ability, competitive experience, and age. Again, for more information, go to the website wheelchairgames.org, and you can also follow VA Adaptive Sports on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Sports for Vets. In related news, the VA recently announced that the National Disabled Veterans Winter Sports Clinic will take place March 31st to April 5th, 2019, in the town of Snowmass, Colorado. The website for more information is wintersportsclinic.org. That's the National Disabled Veterans Winter Sports Clinic website, wintersportsclinic.org. It's an annual clinic hosted by the VA and the Disabled American Veterans Organization. And it's basically focusing on adaptive winter sport instructions for injured veterans and promotes sports therapy and rehabilitation through alpine and Nordic skiing, rock climbing, sled hockey, scuba diving, and other adaptive sports and activities. There are hundreds of veterans who have participated in the past. Last year, nearly 390 veterans participated. So it's a great event. It involves hundreds of volunteers, strategic corporate partnerships, nonprofit organizations, and individual donors who help support and make this life-changing clinic possible every year. Again, the website is wintersportsclinic.org, and this year it's March 31st through April the 5th, 2019, in Snowmass, Colorado. So if you're interested or you know a veteran that might be, check out those websites. Again, wintersportsclinic.org, and for the wheelchair games, it's wheelchairgames.org is the website. Over to you, Richard.
Well, before we close out the show here tonight, David, once again, I'd like to provide our weekly reminder to veterans and their families about the VA program called Coaching in the Care. It's a very important program. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching in the Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call at toll-free 1-888-823-7458. Its hours of operation are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, it's Coaching in the Care, that number, 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I once again would like to remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal, in distress, or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs has the Veterans Crisis Line. You can call it at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. We know many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, David.
Thanks, Richard. Before we wrap up the show tonight, I wanted to again thank our special guest this evening, John Wells, the Executive Director of Military Veterans Advocacy, an organization that has a nationwide impact working to improve VA benefits for veterans and their families. John talked a lot about many of the pending issues facing his organization and facing veterans. And his website, which I urge you to check out, is militaryveteransadvocacy.org. That's Military Veterans with an S on it, advocacy.org. John's been our guest in the past, and it was our pleasure to have him on our show again tonight. We'd also like to thank our sponsors, Joyce and Joe Chivaroli, as well as Corey and Hurley Law Group, for making this weekly show possible on VBS Radio. We would also like to invite listeners to become show sponsors or advertisers on our show. If you're interested, you can contact us a number of different ways on bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour. That's our show website. You'll find our contact information, including our email addresses and our phone numbers. So you can contact us either by phone or by email address. My email address, if you have pen and paper, is lawcorey1@verizon.net. That's LAWCORY, the number one, at verizon.net. Send me an email if you're interested. And as well, if you're interested in being a guest on our show, or if you know someone that you would recommend that we interview on our show, please contact us, because we're always looking for new guests to appear, to provide their experience and insights about veterans' issues for the benefit of our audience. We'd also encourage our listeners to check out our archives, because one of the great things about BBS Radio is all of our shows are archived podcasts. So you can go back and listen to our previous shows, and they're all organized by the weekly date, as well as describing our guest or the subject that we discussed. So you can go back and review, and you'll see that we've had quite a variety of guests and organizations and topics that we've talked about. If you see any that you're interested in, of course, listen to the show, but if you have any you'd like to recommend to us, by all means, please contact us. Before we wrap up, any final thoughts, Rick?
No, it's a good show. It's always nice to hear John and hear what his organization's doing. He's a service to the veteran, that's for sure.
Yep, I certainly agree with that. So, again, I'd like to thank all of you for listening to our show tonight. I'd like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom, and we hope you'll tune in next week, same time, same station, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, we hope you have a great week. Good night.
Good night. Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.